First on the agenda is the overview of the American Legion. Daryl, and if I get your name wrong, Retta Penning, Randy Tesdahl, and Peggy Moon, if you could come up. Peggy's not here, okay. Please proceed, gentlemen, and state your names for the record.
Thank you. My name is Daryl Retta Penning. With me is State Adjutant for the American Legion, Randy Tesdahl.
Welcome to the committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members.
Greetings to you from Minnesota's largest veterans organization, the American Legion. I appreciate the chance to speak to you today, and I appreciate the long hours and hard work all of you put in to make this a better state. Some of you may know that the American Legion is marking its 100th birthday this year. Celebration began this past year when the 100th annual National Convention was held here in Minneapolis, which was also the scene of the first, very first National Convention in 1919. Nearly 10,000 Legionnaires, auxiliary, and guests gathered last August at the Minneapolis Convention Center as we took a strong look at our past with an eye towards our second century of service. Our centennial will conclude this year with our 100th birthday at the National Convention in Indianapolis, the home of our national headquarters. Celebrating 100 years does give you a chance to look back at where you've come from. It all started, of course, with the end of World War I, the Great War, the war to end all wars. The Doughboys began coming home by the tens and hundreds and thousands to every city, town, and farm in Minnesota. They had fought together and won a brutal war, and now they wanted to continue their service together back home. They were highly motivated. They called each other buddies. Veteran clubs and organizations began springing up everywhere. In Paris in early 1919, a caucus of troops still in France determined that a veterans organization, perhaps similar to the Grand Army of the Republic, the Civil War Veterans Group, should be created. They came up with a temporary name, the American Legion. Another caucus was held in St. Louis some weeks later, and finally, the Minneapolis Convention, held in November, brought the organization to official life. The first national parade was held on Nicollet Avenue on Armistice Day, November 11th, during a snowstorm, similar to today. In fact, it was the weather encountered by the veterans, many of whom are from the South, that may have caused them to choose Indianapolis and not Minneapolis as the national headquarters. In Minnesota, posts were formed across the state, 30 by 1919 and hundreds more as the summer went on. By the time of the National Convention, the Minnesota American Legion had over 10,000 members. What did those early Legionnaires do? They worked in their communities, and they worked to help their fellow veterans. In Rochester, hundreds of veterans were streaming in to get help after being gassed and crippled in the war. The males never turned anybody down, but many of these doughboys had nowhere to stay, no money to live on. The Minnesota Legion formed a hospital association with dues contributions coming from every member in the state, with the money going to house and feed these wounded soldiers. That hospital association still exists to this day, helping veterans and their families with unpaid hospital bills. Nearly every flyer from that era was a veteran of the war, and many of them joined the American Legion. There's not a field or airport in Minnesota that doesn't have the Legion's fingerprint all over it. American Legion baseball was founded in Milbank, North Dakota in 1926 and quickly spread to Minnesota and other states. At the present time, Minnesota has the largest baseball program in the nation with over 350 teams. In the last 20 years, Minnesota has produced three national champions and two runners-up. In the 1930s, the Legion worked closely with the Minnesota Highway Patrol to create a statewide school safety patrol program. Patrols were formed at nearly every school in the state and credited with saving the lives of many children. A camp was formed and it came to be called Legionville. bringing in hundreds of school patrollers to learn how to become leaders in school safety. This year, that camp will bring in over 800 students from across Minnesota for a week of safety training and fun. The Legion still works closely with the State Patrol in running that camp. In the 1940s, with World War II still raging, the American Legion, pretty much on its own, pushed through the GI Bill in Congress. It has been called the most important legislation passed in America in the 20th century. Legion continues to author and promote new versions of that bill so that returning veterans can prosper after their service to the nation. I am an example of that. I am a graduate due to the GI Bill. In the post-war period, the American Legion began its Boys State and Girls State program, the premier program in the state for high schoolers to teach them the elements and the basics of democracy and the formation of our government. This year, over 800 high school juniors will get a grassroots appreciation for representative government in these programs in Minnesota. Around 1950, the Legion concluded a long-range fund drive that raised $500,000 to fund a heart research chair at the University of Minnesota. That research played a strong role in combating the rheumatic fever epidemic that was striking American youth. That fund has now grown to over $2 million and funds two research chairs at the university, both of them seeking cures to diseases that affect children. In the late 1980s, a new fund drive was started to create a brain science research chair at the university to look into brain issues affecting veterans. The result of that drive, the Brain Science Center, located at the Minneapolis VA Medical Center, has done cutting-edge research in post-traumatic stress disorder, as well as work on Alzheimer's, alcoholism, Parkinson's, and issues that affect women veterans. That center, with some of the most advanced technology in the world, is now delving into the mysteries of the Gulf War syndrome. All of that gives you a quick overview of what the Legion has been and continues to be in Minnesota. I have not included the work that is done in every community in the state by the posts who provide service, meeting places, scholarships, and much more to veterans, families, and children. The Legion is still very much a grassroots organization, trying to make Minnesota a better place to live, one veteran and one community at a time. Today, the Legion is facing new challenges. We have nearly lost all our World War II generation, and the Korean veterans are not far behind. The average age of the Vietnam veteran is around 70. Many younger veterans have new lifestyle and do not choose service organizations. Our membership is declining and will continue to decline. It's a hard fact that we must deal with. But as we enter our second century of service, we are facing these challenges head on. The Legion has been too much of a positive influence on this state and this nation to slide into irrelevancy at this point. We must streamline our operations. We must give the younger veterans a reason to join. We must maintain the programs I just told you about so they can serve a new generation. We must continue to be watchdogs over government programs that serve those who served America. And we will continue to be a resource to this legislator. We must all work together to make sure the veterans who come home come all the way home. We must be sure that veterans are treated wisely and well, and that their services is remembered. The American Legion is not going to go away. I appreciate this opportunity to speak and give you a brief outline of the work that the American Legion does. Please rely on us, as I said, to be a resource to your deliberations. We are intensely interested in making sure our veterans receive the care, and training, and honor they have earned. We will be your partners in this great cause. Thank you very much for your time, and we'd be more than happy to take any questions that you may have.
Members, are there any questions for Mr. Redepenning? Representative Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for coming in. And I know there's probably a few of us that have membership with the American Legion and the VFW, and which in my case. Could we get a little update on the improvements with Legionville? I know there was some funding that was presented to Legionville. How is that going? I know you had some lake issues out there that you had to take
sure
care of,
did.
Too.
Yeah, we sure did. We had a big bog break loose on the other side of the lake and landed right on our beach at Legionville, presented a number of problems. You might have even seen it on TV, and I'm proud to say our bog buster is sitting next to me here, Randy. Randy was instrumental in the whole. There was a whole group actually, and you know, Randy, why don't you speak on that issue? Yeah. That's
give us a little update on that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
The bog is contained along a partnership between the Minnesota DNR, the Minnesota American Legion, and the Lake Association up there. Got that bog. We tried to move it in Hull, along with representatives from Evinrude and other outboard community, folks from the outboard supporting community. But we ended up having to cut it up. We cut it up, we moved it out of the area, and we last fall did some improvements to the beach where it had set and deposited a lot of sediment. With the DNR's authorization, we've cleaned that area up. It's ready to go. But as a result, we did not hold sessions with the Minnesota State Highway Patrol bringing students in last year. We felt during the summer while we were moving that thing, it would be unsafe for students to be in that area. Mr. Chair, to Representative Detmer's direct question, on the issue of the chow hall, it's coming along wonderful. The grant that was provided to the Minnesota American Legion has allowed the facility for food service that go to those kids, which was originally established in the 30s, as was talked about in the history, some long-needed upgrades. It now has full HVAC. It now has all brand-new insulation. It's getting recited in some parts. We've got a fire suppression system that's been added to it. It can be used winter and summer now with the HVAC that's been installed. The electrical's been all upgraded. The Minnesota American Legion, specifically Legionville, is very thankful for the grant that we received through the Legacy in order to make those improvements to give Minnesota's children and youth the opportunity to experience the great outdoors, as well as teach and educate them on safety within school bus, school districts, the streets and roads, as well as some water survival safety that they teach there.
And Mr. Chair, you know, with the legacy funds, this is a good example of how we can use legacy funds, because the Legionville is a legacy, you know, it dates back for years. And another organization is the Disabled Vets Camp that also qualifies for legacy funds, and a lot of improvements have been done at that facility for veterans. In fact, it was a overflow for the veterans VA hospital during World War I. So these two organizations have done a lot for our veterans in the Minnesota, and I hope maybe if we do take a tour sometime, these two facilities could be maybe for the committee to visit these two facilities. I think it would be well worth our time to get the committee out there to see what the money that we've dedicated to these facilities has done. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions from the committee? So I have one, Mr. Tesdall. What'd you do with the bog? Because I live on Rainy Lake, and we have a lot of those cattail bogs that come floating loose.
What we were able to do, once we got the pieces small enough that we could maneuver from behind the bog, we learned you can't pull a bog very well because the thrust of the engines is pushing water against what you're trying to pull. Once we figured that out, we were able to cut it in pieces about the size of this room. It was actually about 5 acres, 4.5+ acres, according to the DNR and the overhead photos that they had taken. So we cut it in manageable pieces the size of this room. We got about 12 pontoons, and slow and steady is the word when moving a bog. Any piece of bog, once you gradually get it going, just keep going nice and easy. And we learned that after trying to really rev up, and we'd go up on top of the bog. You got to really stay behind it and just nice and easy, gentle. And it just took somebody with a bullhorn standing in the middle of 12 pontoons. And other various boats, and said, this is where we're going to move it. Now, Legionville owns about 600 acres up there at that facility. And as a result, we have a lot of shoreline. So we're fortunate to be able to pretty much take it back where it originally came from, which was American Legion property. But statute says once a bog breaks free, it's nobody's until it comes to rest wherever it comes to rest. So originally was our land. It came to rest back on our land, and we put it back on our land. And what we've done in the meantime with the authority of the DNR is we've run strapping and cable from the shoreline that we have secured to large trees and whatnot up into the woods, out across those sections of bog, and anchored them in with cable and straps and steel I-beams over the front end of it, as well as staking it with wooden stakes down through, which is the common practice in Minnesota. But DNR said with the pieces as large as they are, we'll allow you to run steel cables and drop I-beams over it. So the regional director up there, as well as with state approval, have allowed us to, DNR's been very cooperative to help us contain that thing so that it stays where it is.
Probably if I ask too much more, thank you, Mr. Chesdell. If I ask too many more questions about floating bogs, I'll probably be getting into the environment area. So I guess I'll stay away from that for this committee. So, any other questions for these two gentlemen? Well, Representative Grassel.
Can you talk about the part where girls and boys state, and that is, I have to say, that is a very good program. It's a good program. Back when I was in high school, I was one of the people that got to participate in that. And very educational. It opened my eyes to, just the how the government works and so on and so forth. And it's good for kids to see that and to be able to participate in that kind of thing. Never saw myself as sitting in one of these chairs, but, as fate would and time would have it, here I am.
Well, thank you. And as I just whispered, we're looking for volunteers if you'd be willing to help out in that situation.
Yeah. And Mr. Chair, just on that issue, I've been a guest speaker at Boys States when I was out at Southwest State University. Now it's up in St. Cloud at St. John's. So it's great. You can contact the Boys State, and also I interview the candidates in my American Legion when we bring them in, and I interview them, and it's a great program for our boys, and there's Girls State too that we have too. So,
any other questions from the committee? Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you,
appreciate your time. Appreciate your testimony. Okay, next up we have from overview of Disabled American Veterans, Rick Jarvis, the department commander, and Trent Dilks, the legislative director.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Rick Jarvis. I am the commander of the Department of Minnesota. I live in Little Falls, Minnesota. I'm a two-tour Vietnam vet who left the Army before I was 21 and quickly figured out how much help that veterans' issues need and how much it is appreciated. I've been an advocate for veterans all of my life since my service time. I look forward to working with legislation this year, and hope that your judgments are going to be towards veterans. And with that, I just wanted to introduce myself. I'm going to turn it over to Legislator Director Trent Dilks. So thank you for allowing me to be here,
Mr. Dilks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Trent Dilks, Legislative Director for the DAV. And I wanted to provide an overview of our organization and some of the programs and services we offer and some of those that we partner with. The Disabled American Veterans, we're a little bit younger than our brothers and sisters in the Legion. We're only 98 years old. With a mission to empower veterans to lead high-quality lives with respect and dignity. We have over 19,000 members in the state of Minnesota. And those members are divided into 31 chapters across the state. We're excited. We're growing. We're growing in membership. We're growing in chapters. And hopefully in this calendar year, we'll add two more to that. I'm hoping you got our annual report. It should be in the packet there, a printed copy. If you'd like, my overview is going to kind of follow along with that. I'll be discussing specifically the activities we did in calendar year 2018. I'm happy to answer questions at any point. I'm going to go over several of our major programs. So, Mr. Chair, I'm happy to stop at any point to answer questions along the way. On page 6, you can see a map of where our chapters, our current chapters, 31 across the state, where they're located. You can say we're pretty well distributed. The newest chapter in the state is in Apple Valley. We're also looking at one far in northern Minnesota. I can't remember the name of the town, but almost Canada chapter. And then moving on, so our veteran services on page 8. You can see an overview of our veteran services. So the Disabled American Veterans is what's called a power of attorney. We hold a power of attorney so we can file claims directly with the Veterans Affairs. The American Legion is kind of administered by MDVA, Military Order of the Purple Heart. Some of these are what are considered power of attorneys for submitting claims. So we have a team of highly trained service officers at the Whipple Building. Our service officers, before they can call themselves a DAV service officer, undergo 18 months of training. They have to take a couple of college courses in physiology and anatomy to be able to help with claims and things like that. That is funded through our national organization. They do not accept any federal funding. They work alongside, but not for the Department of Veterans Affairs.
I'm gonna pause right there. I do have one question, if we'll go back one page, Mr.
Yes.
Cook. On your chapters, you said there's one going to northern Minnesota. I'll forgive you for that, but it sounds like it could be international calls. But anyway, so you have your chapters spread out around the state. Some will they service other towns? If for instance, Virginia, it looks like right now, or Bemidji would be the closest one to where I'm from. If there's people in my area, would those chapters service those people?
Mr. Chair, absolutely. And the chapter I couldn't think of was Roseau.
Oh, okay.
We're looking at establishing one in Roseau. So from those chapters, they each have an area. So we don't leave a gap in our service areas for our chapters. They divide up. So if there's a large area of the state, Bemidji has an extremely large service area. They do an excellent job. If we are able to stand up the Roseau chapter and we're nearly there as far as new members, then they'll be able to split that up a little bit. But if this were divided by the chapter areas, you'd see that all portions of the state, they don't have a boundary within just Bemidji or 20 miles. They'll reach out to anywhere within their area.
All right, thank you.
So the services, a brief rundown of what our national service officers are doing over there at the federal building. They reviewed 11,773 veteran files. They conducted 10,362 veteran interviews. In total, that's over 66,000 activities for Minnesota's veterans. They also work closely with the county veteran service officers. So as a POA, the veteran can go in, they can select who they want as their representative, their service org through their CVSO, and then they send it in through one of our offices. So we work closely with the county veteran service officers for those who select the DAV. It's also available to walk in at the Whipple Building, and they do take walk-ins and work directly with some veterans, but most of this is coordinated through the CVSOs. I skipped over 10 and 11 because that's our legislative activities. You might see me in here a few times working on a couple of our different initiatives. And moving on to our transportation program. Our transportation program, yes.
Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And looking at the number of claims filed, do you keep record on the number of claims actually were accepted and the veteran was able to get the benefits that they deserved? Do you keep any statistics on that?
Yeah, and in there it does, Mr. Chair, Representative Detmer, it does break down that team filed 6,485 new claims, mm-hmm. which resulted in requesting 5,783 The success rate, I don't have the breakdown of that. I know that it has resulted in service connections, but one veteran, as you might know, may end up with three or four service-connected conditions. So I'm not sure on our success rate.
And that would, Mr. Chair, thank you. And that probably, that information probably would be being able to get that from the VA then?
Mr. Chair, Representative Detmer, I could get that from our NSOs, our National Service Officers, hold that information. So I can get that and supply it to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Proceed.
Transportation program. We have what we call a volunteer transportation program. The DAV started transporting veterans just after World War I. Mr. Ford borrowed us 10 Model Ts. And we started driving around veterans, and we've been doing it ever since, and we've been driving Fords ever since. It's been a long-term relationship. In Minnesota, we have 34 vehicles currently. If you back up 4 years ago, we had six. We now have 34 vehicles stationed around the state in five different regional programs. Page 12 has a breakdown of those programs. We have a Metro, Central Minnesota, Northwest Minnesota, Northeast Minnesota, and Southeast Minnesota program, which is our newest one and is still being fully implemented in that region. We also have some vehicles that are counted on those programs where we have just teamed up with a local county veteran service officer, supplied them with the vehicle, and through our partnership, they don't have to worry about fuel maintenance and things like that for their vehicle, and they keep local control of the vehicle as well, and that's a growing area of our programs. We also, and it's a unique partnership with the VA, we operate their volunteer transportation network for all of the volunteer drivers in Minnesota. We also do that nationwide. That's a role in 50 states and in one territory that the DAV nationally plays. In Minnesota, that looked like 1.4 million miles, providing over 28,000 veteran transports last year alone. That's nearly 68,000 volunteer hours, and the value of that according to BLS, Bureau of Labor Statistics, is about $1.6 million in volunteer time. We're very proud of this program. I would highlight that any of these services are provided absolutely free. The DAV does not charge, will not collect for the services we provide to our veterans. It's something that's a core belief, and it's something that if we're offering it as a service in anything here I cover, it is absolutely free of charge to the veteran. In this program, we do not charge the veteran. We will not accept money from the veteran. And we also do not collect travel pay or anything else from the VA. This is something we fundraise. It's a service we exist to provide. We do not accept federal funding. So this is something that we're very proud to be able to offer in an extensive network.
Representative Grossel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm looking at your list of locations for vehicles. I notice that there's not very many up along the border towns, or if any. Is there any plans in the future to increase your fleet and get some more availability?
Mr. Chair, Representative, absolutely. Actually, unfortunately, the weather made me cancel, but I was just last week supposed to meet with the CVS, the County Veteran Service Officers from, and I wish I had a map of where the vehicles are, but from the furthest north, and trying to figure out. One thing I can tell you about our 34 vehicles is they operate probably using 12 different models. Every region of the state, whether it's the ones that we have located in the metro, the ones we're putting in Stillwater Forest Lake, or the ones that we had in Grand Marais, Virginia, we have one going into Ely very shortly here. The region really dictates how we operate it and how we best serve our veterans. And so we have a flexibility, and right now looking for partners in that Roseau, that northern Minnesota area, to find out what that model looks like and then hopefully implement it throughout this calendar year to expand our service. I think we're at 34, and I think we'll be at 42 probably going into next year.
Follow-up, Representative Grossel.
Yes. Yes, Mr. Chair. Thank you. As we discussed before, the problems with our volunteers getting whacked pretty hard for taxes to where it made it pretty difficult, if not impossible, for them to continue to volunteer. So if this is a remedy to help get our veterans the service they need.
Mr. Chair, Representative, absolutely. That is one nice thing when we step in and provide the vehicle through our partnership. They have a vehicle to drive, so they don't incur that expense. They're released from liability under the Federal Tort Claims Protection Act because our vehicles come with a U.S. government plate on them. The DAV buys them. The VA sticks a government plate and gives us a federal fuel card for them, and then they allow us to operate them and place them in communities across Minnesota. So it relieves them of the finances, the expense of the vehicle. It relieves the counties of the expense of the vehicles, and it's absolutely free to the veterans it serves. So I'm looking forward to moving into that area and serving more veterans up there. I would point out my other title, because we're a small nonprofit veteran service organization. My other title is transportation director. So I do oversee this program, and I'm pretty proud of where we've taken it over the last few years in growth.
So I've got a follow up, Mr. Dilks, on this. So a lot of our rural counties, to piggyback on what Representative Grassel said, have either the county boards have supplied the VSO with a vehicle to help with transports. Do you coordinate rides then? So, for instance, if a ride's coming from Lake of the Woods County or Coochin County, can they meet up in Hibbing and then transport, so it's not putting such a stress on the county volunteer workers?
Mr. Chair, absolutely. And that's those five regional programs. We fund five full-time regional coordinators who partner with the CVSOs and other resources in the communities, whether they're near one of our vehicles or not. We've been able to do some pretty amazing things where we get veterans from the Roseau or International Falls area. They get them to one of our vehicles. The volunteer gets them down to the metro. The metro will then get them down to the Iowa border. The Iowa DAV will come up and pick the veteran up and get them down to the hospital there in Iowa, where they have some different treatment programs. Coochin County is a great example. The volunteer drivers there overnight at the VA if they have to make the entire trip. So working with them and coordinating with them is, we try to be a resource in transportation, whether the county is providing the vehicle or we're providing the vehicle. And that's what our five regional coordinators are able to do.
All right, thank you. Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick follow-up on that. And you got coordination with the tribes on that? I know they're transporting vets around, too.
Mr. Chair, Representative, absolutely. And we're working on that specifically in our Northeast program right now is really leading the way in that, because they are the closest to some of the reservations. But absolutely, we're working with serving the tribes. And we've looked at establishing programs within there, because there's nothing that says we have to partner with the CVSO. We can partner with other entities, and that's an area we've been looking at and providing a service.
Follow-up. Thank you for that, and Mr. Chair, and I think that's all good, and because the more that I know, tribes are putting money into this, and the more we can coordinate and get vets where they need to go. So thank you for that.
You can proceed. Thank you.
The transportation program really highlights something that we hold as a core value, a core part of our mission, and that is filling gaps in service. Just like if there is a gap in the service for the tribal areas, we found a gap in service for transportation. We do some here in the metro area. There are a lot of resources. Greater Minnesota, the nature of veterans health care is that it is regional, and they must make it to one of the regional health care centers. We bring a lot to Fargo. We bring some to Sioux Falls, but mainly St. Cloud and Minneapolis is the majority in Minnesota. And when you live in some of these greater Minnesota communities, it was a limited resource. Something we're looking at, and I'm excited to expand, is something we're moving into Steele County, who does offer a county-funded transportation up to Minneapolis. It works well. It has the funding secured. We don't want to replace something that's working well. We're here to fill gaps. A veteran down there pointed out to me, I have to travel 2 hours up to the VA, sit there all day, and then travel back. And now it's an 8 to 10 hour day. And it's service they could have gotten at one of the community-based outpatient clinics 20 minutes away from their home. But all of the current resources in that region were focused on getting to the metro. So I was very happy to hear that concern, and we very quickly changed the program in that area, moved a vehicle down there, and will now offer local transportation so that if they need a basic physical, they can ride 20 minutes to the VA. The volunteer will hang out. The physical takes about a half an hour and bring them home. And instead of spending an 8 to 10 hour day on the road, especially for some of our elderly veterans, that we'll be able to do that. So that's when we look at what we're doing, we find a gap and we try to fill that gap if nobody's currently there, and that's an example of that. The next would be our outdoors program. That's on page 14. Last year, the Disabled American Veterans Department of Minnesota brought 1,451 veterans. And that ranges men, women, World War II veterans still on some of these, to current era and currently serving veterans, on hunting, fishing, hiking, camping, and other outdoor activities. We also partner with other groups, the American Legion, the VFW, to put on some of the Camp Ripley hunts and other things like that. I got a chance to go on one of these. They have a houseboat that we bring 24 veterans out on. They needed somebody to drive the other one. It fit into my schedule. I got to drive the other one, and it was an amazing experience. These are focused on not just a good time. We've seen some programs and we've kind of withheld some support. It's not just a good time. This is to get veterans out there together to facilitate discussions, and we see that happen when we provide the opportunity with low stress and things like that, and we see it across generations. It's not very often you get a Korean War veteran and an Iraq or Afghanistan war veteran to sit down around a campfire at a fish fry out there, out on Lake of the Woods, and be able to talk about things. And as the days go on, I got to see more and more of that interaction and veterans opening up naturally by providing the environment that kind of facilitated it. It's not clinical. We don't bring providers out, and we don't put that kind of stress on them, but we do try to provide an experience that, through experience and through the years that we've been running this, that we've found facilitates that for our veterans.
Mr. Dilks, I've got a friend that works with the Wounded Warrior Group up in International Falls on Rainy Lake. Do you coordinate with groups like that for these type of experiences too? Because that's what he does, is takes Wounded Warriors fishing. So,
Mr. Chair, and it sounds familiar to me. The last thing I'll touch on is our foundation, and we support many groups like that, and they sound familiar. We may have even supported requests from them. We can't do it all. There are many that are doing a great job, and so we do partner with them. There are ones that will fund the entire thing and come up, but they'll put it on, so we sponsor the event or put on the event for them and facilitate. I can't say for certain that group. They sound familiar, but we do absolutely partner with groups all across the state that are doing this well.
Thank you.
We do have a coordinator who does that, and that is his job. Let's see. All right, then we have our Donor Connect program. Donor Connect program takes veterans who need medical equipment or their family members and connects them with donors who have the equipment that they'd like to get into the hands of a veteran or their family member. Hundreds of pieces, thousands of pieces of medical equipment, ranging from the elevator lifts for homes to motorized scooters, all sorts of things that this program provides. We do have a volunteer coordinator that answers calls and provides the coordination for that. Briefly, two stories from that. We had a veteran in treatment in the St. Cloud facility there. They have a nationally recognized treatment facility at the St. Cloud VA. If you haven't had an opportunity to learn about them, we had a veteran in the inpatient treatment program. And his child at home needed a hospital bed. They didn't have the resources or the ability to get that. By connecting them in our Donor Connect, we were able to secure one, use a system of volunteers to get it across the state and into that veteran's home. And we had another one where one of our volunteer drivers went to pick somebody up, and he is asking if they could get him to the store, which was almost one block away. And they had asked if he wasn't able to get there. He was not. And he did not have a motorized cart, and he was not eligible to get one from the VA. We were able to secure him one, a four-wheel one that could get him just down the block to the local store. And now anytime you're in that area, you see him buzzing all around town. It absolutely changed his life. Again, this is a service we provide. It is absolutely free. We will not accept money from the veterans that we serve at that program either. The last thing I'd like to cover is our foundation. As I had pointed out earlier, we believe in finding gaps in services to our veterans, that we don't want to step on into an area where somebody is already doing an excellent job. And that is part of the role our foundation plays. Sometimes it's providing funding to MACV homeless prevention. It might be providing funding to outdoors groups that are doing an excellent job, where we don't have to go and recreate the wheel. They're already doing an excellent job of it. Mental health services, our foundation, pain management, just partnered with a gym / physical therapy outfit here, where we'll be putting 20 veterans through a 6-month program where they'll be training 3 times a week. The foundation funded that fully so that it's no expense to the veterans. They'll be conducting research throughout it to be able to find how well it worked in pain management and other things along that line. And so our foundation is really where we try to go out and support these people who are groups and organizations that are already doing their job well. In this book, I kind of went over it, but there you can find our department expense, revenue and expenses. You can find our foundation revenue expenses. We laid it all out there. I'm proud to say just at the department level, we gave out or spent on veteran services about $3 million. We do receive a grant, the VSO grant, through the state fund, and it's about $100,000. And 100% of that grant, administered by MDVA, is spent on veteran services. None of it is spent on management or professional fees. 100% of what we get from the state is spent on just these services that I covered, which I said about $3 million it costs us to operate. And that's... ready for any questions, Mr. Chair, but that's an overview of the DAV.
Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Delt. Could you kind of cover what your priorities are in terms of the DAV legislative priorities? And I think that's important because we're going to be hearing some pieces of the legislation here in this committee. And I think if you turn to page 11, he has the DAV has listed their legislative priorities.
Mr. Dilks.
Mr. Chair, Representative, absolutely. I thank you for the opportunity. They're on page 11, and it's no coincidence that the very first thing listed is the property tax value exclusion for surviving spouses. This is something as an organization and myself have been working on for several years now. It is a clear-cut top priority of the Commander's Task Force, which we're a member organization for. They voted unanimously to make it a top priority, and it has been and remains the top priority of the disabled American veterans. I traveled the state just yesterday. I was in Duluth, and a group of Northeast veterans came to Duluth, and this was the number one topic that we talked about. I hold town halls all over the state, getting feedback, looking for ideas on how we generate this list internally through the DAV, and consistently, whether I'm in Duluth or Cohasset or down in Rochester or across the state where I hold these meetings, anywhere from 10 to 100 people show up, and consistently they see this as the top priority. We'd like to see the elimination of the 8-year expiration date for surviving spouses. We think that it is right to create a one-time transferability, which makes this not in the continuation of the veterans' benefit, but it is actually then a benefit for the surviving spouses. And this is something that we really hope that we can get done. We've been working with the counties, with the assessors to make sure that everything's in order. The cost, when the House 3 years ago did the cost analysis on this, we're talking 1/100 of 1% impact to the county's property tax shift. So it's not cost prohibitive. And we're really hoping that this year we can get it done. It would also push the due date back to December 15th. Right now it's July 1st, and if you get your award letter on your 4-year-old claim on July 10th, you then have to wait 18 months before you're able to utilize this benefit because July 1st has nominally been set as the date. And so that's been generally agreed upon, is why not make it like the homestead application instead of setting it randomly in the middle of July and missing 6 months worth of veterans or surviving spouses. a veterans omnibus bill.
Mr. Chair, just to on that point regarding the surviving spouses, there's two bills that we're looking at, House File 204 and House File 205. I would hope that everybody would write those down. The three people from this committee that are on it right now are myself, Chair Eklund, and Representative Brand. I would hope that everybody else would sign on to those two bills, because this is something that we've been working on with the DAV for several years. And I think we finally got the counties to come on board to allow us to have that one-time sale, which would put the more expensive property back on the tax rolls and allow the surviving spouse to get into a smaller facility. And we have a policy in this committee, if your phone goes off, you have 25 push-ups. This is important. I hope that everybody can on this committee would sign on to those two bills, 204 and House File 205. Thank you.
Mr. Dilks.
Mr. Chair, Representative, absolutely. We've been, and in the veteran services world, I've become known as the property tax guy. I've been talking about this so much. I've had assessors reach out to me for advice on this particular thing. I've been talking about it so much. So I'm very hopeful that this is the year we can get it across the finish line. The veterans omnibus bill, I was encouraged to hear the chair speak about that. Over and over, of course, we see veterans issues, which receive bipartisan support. They're nonpartisan issues. We see them get wrapped into bills as part of a larger fight, which we understand is the reality here. But things that could benefit our veterans end up not making it because they're tied into these other bills. So any opportunity to take some of the veterans legislation and move it together would be excellent. We nearly had part of this property tax thing accomplished, I want to say last couple of years, but it got tied into something else and tied into something else. And by the time these big log rolled things get across the finish line, we're kind of lost in the shuffle. So any opportunity to separate veterans from that would be greatly appreciated and something the veterans community would like to see.
And Mr. Dilks, I think now that this committee is better aligned with our folks, friends from across the street, that we can probably expect to see that. So,
and Mr. Chair, also any bills that we could just get right to the House floor, and like single bills, and not even be part of anything else, that would be great too. To see how many veterans bills we can get right to the House floor, and not be tied up with other bills. So that would be great too.
Mr. Dilks.
Mr. Chair, I'm glad to hear that, and I know the veterans community will be glad to hear that if we can get that accomplished. Expand some outdoor opportunities for disabled veterans. We've looked at this for several years. You look at other states around us, Wisconsin, Montana, Colorado, Texas, that you think of as outdoor states. They have found some creative ways to expand opportunities for disabled veterans to get out and hunt, fish, trap, those sorts of things. This isn't very well fleshed out right now. We're trying to work with the DNR and some of the other partners to make sure that it is a workable solution. So right now it's kind of an idea that we'd like to continue to develop. And then opportunities for disabled veterans to receive a college education, whether that's technical or four-year. The expiration of veterans benefits of the GI Bill and those sorts of things continue to impact our veterans. We've laid out an idea that would be a last dollar in program where they would activate the state GI Bill benefits, any vocational rehabilitation, and if there was any federal non-debt creating aid, and if there was anything left out, trying to find a way to kind of fill that gap so that we can get our veterans into the trades or into the college to get the training they need. Again, this is looking at some of the other programs in other states and trying to find ways that we can improve here in Minnesota. We're not trying to go quite as far as Alabama, where the children of a 40% disabled veteran gets to go to college for free, but trying to find ways to assist some of our disabled veterans and include more of those. So, Mr. Chair, that's a brief overview of our legislative priorities.
Any questions from the committee? I do have one, being a former county commissioner. You do have Peace and Valley with Association of Minnesota Counties on this, because I'm going to an event tonight, and I maybe get asked that. The commissioners are down in St. Paul this week. So,
Mr. Chair, yes, and that's the property tax value exclusion. We sat down with Matt from the County Association, and we discussed this at length, and specifically that we don't want to continue to come back and ask for a little bit more, a little bit more. This is not a slippery slope case. This is something where we'd like to do this for the surviving spouses. We think it's right. And me personally, and speaking for our organization, then we'd like to move on to some outdoors and education things. But we got to knock out this top priority first.
Thank you. Oh, Representative Dittmer.
I see we have a handout here, Mr. Chair, on the Veterans Day on the Hill. Do you want to just briefly touch on that, Mr. Diltz? And also, can we get a color, electronic color part of this so that we can send it out and put it on Facebook and so forth? So,
Mr. Chair, Representative, I have sent that in color to the committee administrator, so maybe he can help me out and send that out. Veterans Day on the Hill. This is between the Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officers, the United Veterans Legislative Council, and the Commander's Task Force. The DAV, we play a role to help facilitate it and plan it and kind of take a little bit of a lead there. It's going to be March 20th, 1:30, and the Rotunda will be the rally. Prior to that, the DAV is putting on a free lunch at the Armory. We've secured the Armory right down the road here. So starting at 10:30, we're going to have buses. I think we're going to have 20-plus buses that will help support from greater Minnesota coming in. We always get the best showing, actually, from outside of the metro. I was just up there in Duluth, and they're already talking about 3 buses coming together from that northeast region and coming down, being able to stop for breakfast beforehand. We see them from all over the state. They'll come over. We'll have a lunch. We'll have some discussions about some of our topics. We're anticipating somewhere between 400 and 500 veterans at the lunch. From there, we'll walk over to the Capitol. 1:30, we'll have the rally itself. Invite, I'm sure if you haven't been invited yet, Mr. Chair, the chair, the ranking member from the House and Senate Veterans Affairs Committees to address, I want to say last year, somewhere in the neighborhood of 1,000 veterans in the Rotunda. It goes up to the third level, so we get a pretty good showing there. And then, touch on some of our priorities. It's also an opportunity for them to make appointments with their members. And members are welcome to come over to the lunch itself and find where their area. I'm still trying to figure out how to get people to go to an area, but I'm pretty sure I'll come up with a solution for that. So starting at 10:30 in the Armory, 1:30 in the Rotunda. If the members are able to make an appearance at one or both parts of it, it'd be great. But it's going to be, I believe, bigger and better, and it's been bigger and better every year for at least the last 4 years.
Mr. Chair, yes, it's something that I remember last year walking into the Rotunda. I got goosebumps when I looked up because all levels just packed, standing room only, of veterans from around the state of Minnesota, and the DAV was able to get all the busing organized. That's a big job in itself. And I think the veterans around the state of Minnesota are speaking with one voice. And I think that carries a lot of weight around this state. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Dittmer, and we'll make sure that we get this well advertised. So it'll be a good event. Thank you, gentlemen, for your testimony today, and we appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next on the agenda, Representative Johnson, House File 530. Chair moves the House File 530 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Representative Johnson, you can proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members of the Veterans Committee, it's a pleasure to be here again. This is the second time I've been before this committee over the years I've been down here. And it's an honor to bring House File 530 before you. This bill appropriates money out of the general fund out to a domestic abuse prevention grants specifically for veterans. Hennepin County Veterans Court was was created in 2010 to help veterans who are entangled in the criminal justice system and struggling with addiction, mental illness, including but not exclusively PTSD and other occurring disorders. And Hennepin County asked the Domestic Abuse Project to create a domestic violence therapeutic program specifically for veterans. Change Step is the program that was created in response to this request. Change Step provides group therapy specifically tailored to veterans, both active duty participants who have committed abuse, tailored toward a, and it's the group is tailored to consist of 8 to 12 veterans and lasts 24 weeks. This is a program that has been proven to work, and with me today, I do have Jody Shipp, the supervisor of case management, Amber Rithney Keefe, the director of client services, and Annie Van Amory, the executive director, to also give some testimony on this bill. And with that, I'll turn it over to them.
Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Annie Van Avery, and I am the executive director of the Domestic Abuse Project, commonly known as DAP. I'm here with my colleagues, Amethany Keefe and Jody Shipp. Thank you so much for the opportunity to be here today. It's a privilege to be in front of the committee to talk more about our organization and our unique therapeutic program for service members, Change Step. As was mentioned, since 1979, DAP has served the Twin Cities community with innovative and effective programming with the mission to stop domestic violence as it occurs and prevent it in the future. We are unique in that we offer trauma-informed healing for every member of the family who has been impacted by domestic abuse. We provide individual and group therapy sessions for both victims and perpetrators, along with education and advocacy services and case management for individuals and families. DAP serves over 3,000 clients each year, and no one is turned away for lack of funds. DAP's successful programming includes our unique curriculum and therapy for perpetrators of domestic abuse, our men's therapy program. Our men's team of therapists serves adult perpetrators of domestic violence through group and individual therapy. Our program is one of few in the area that meets state requirements for perpetrator intervention and incorporates proven trauma therapy and treatment techniques in its work with men who have used abusive relationships, abusive behavior in intimate relationships. As was mentioned, participants attend a 24-week program that includes psychoeducation as well as time to process their experiences in session. Therapists and education groups work to frame the issues of domestic violence relative to the larger and more systematic context. While process groups are facilitated by well-qualified therapists and staff members, I would say that a powerful step towards change for participants is peer-to-peer education and accountability. During the program, men work to accept responsibility for their violent actions and give presentations on their plan for building and maintaining equal and interdependent relationships. Our outcomes show that our programs work. Over 90% of men who complete our program do not reoffend within a year, and 83% can be nonviolent in their intimate relationships following treatment. Over 96% of women and children in our programs make a safety plan in case there is a reoccurrence of domestic violence. We're here today to tell you about a unique men's program specifically customized for past and current military service members, Change Step. When the Hennepin County Veterans Court was created in 2010, DAP was asked to create a domestic violence therapeutic program for veterans who have served in the military. We created Change Step, a model based on our successful men's program, but tailored specifically for service members. Change Step incorporates an understanding of military culture and adopts military cultural structures that enhance engagement in the program. The effectiveness of this program is to be transformational in the lives of our participants, and that has been clear. We know the need is there, and we know that the program is effective. If there are no questions at this time, Mr. Chair and committee members, I'd like to introduce again Amithany Keefe, our Director of Client Services, and Jody Shipp, Case Management Supervisor, and they'll provide you with more specifics about Change Step and its effectiveness in serving our service members. Thank you again for this opportunity.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and proceed.
So good afternoon, Chairman and representatives of the committee. My name is Amithany Keefe, and I'm the Director of Client Services at the Domestic Abuse Project. I've also co-facilitated the Change Step group, so I'm honored to be here today to share a little bit more about the services that we offer veterans at DAP. Generally, we know that veterans make up about 1% of the population, but at DAP, we see about 10% of the folks that come through our Batterers Intervention Program identify as veterans. To provide a little bit of a domestic violence context, a 2009 study reported that about 81% of veterans suffering from depression and PTSD engage in at least one violent act against their partner, and that male veterans with PTSD are 2 to 3 times more likely to engage in domestic violence than those without PTSD. Between 2003 and 2010, civilian rates of domestic violence actually decreased in the general population. However, within the military community, domestic violence increased. One study specifically stating that within the Army, it increased by 177%. And so it was around this time that the courts created the Veterans Court and that we were asked to create our Change Step program. And it has proven to be successful. The Change Step model was built off of DAP's men's program curriculum and incorporates military culture, teachings, experiences. Our program is inclusive of all branches, discharge statuses, and service durations. And as Annie said, we don't turn anyone away for lack of funds. The cornerstone of our program is group therapy sessions that are meant to incorporate both education around domestic violence as well as facilitate depthful group discussions about ways in which service members might engage in unhealthy relationship dynamics. Topics that we might talk about include the types of abuse and understanding the cycle of violence, gender norms, the physiology of anger and what happens internally if your threat response gets triggered, the effects of violence on children, shame and responsibility, healthy communication, and most importantly, taking responsibility for the use of violence in your relationships. Because the group consists of veterans, many of whom have seen combat or who have experienced other traumas that have led to post-traumatic stress disorder, space is given for service members to discuss how childhood or military trauma intersect with their use of abuse. Change Step is unique in that we attend to the trauma veterans have experienced as a result of their military service. And while we know that that's not an excuse for abuse, we also understand how this might impact and potentially enhance the lethality of violence. While some skills that are taught in the military are absolutely vital for the survival of the individual and the unit, when returning home, they may impede a service member's capacity to thrive as a civilian. A pillar of our understanding is that domestic violence is taught through our lived experiences, and a different way of engaging in conflict can also be taught and applied in relationships. Change Step incorporates aspects of military culture into the program to leverage previous positive teachings. One example of this is that veterans have a shared experience, even when they're strangers, that can bond them together. Change Step taps into that cultural norm by encouraging participants to think of each other as a unit and refer to each other as battle buddies in their healing journey. And an example of this could be walking through an assignment and picking someone in the group that you have a connection with and that you have a shared understanding with. And that person can act as your battle buddy and walk you through your assignment, ask you the questions, help you stay on point, and provide constructive feedback if you're straying a little bit outside of what we're looking for. The participants have a sense of camaraderie, and that encourages openness, vulnerability, and trust. The military also has a principle of upholding a certain standard of behavior and of not giving others a pass. This level of accountability is part of what makes the group therapy program effective. Service members are holding each other accountable, and it's not just the therapist alone that's doing that. In addition to facilitating groups, the Change Step program staff are involved in training nationally and engaged in coordinated community response to domestic violence work with other system partners that work with veterans. We have trained all 3 Minnesota Vet Centers, West Care staff, a Marine Corps family advocacy program through Camp Pendleton. and most notably social workers in the Air Force Family Advocacy Program. The Air Force has institutionalized the Change Step model among the family advocacy programs, and it's being utilized in 75 Air Force bases worldwide. Since the Change Step program began in 2012, 94 men have graduated from our program in Minnesota, and approximately 450 have graduated from the Air Force programs. At the close of group, service members have an increased capacity to express empathy for their partners, to recognize and identify cues to violence and de-escalate, to recognize and stop destructive self-talk, accept responsibility for violence, and display a shift in attitudes that really contribute to interpersonal violence. A request today is that you offer your support in obtaining funding for this service, as well as supportive services for veterans' families. While our organization works with every member of the family, our philosophy is that domestic violence will not stop unless individuals that use abusive behaviors are held accountable and provided with the opportunity to heal from their own traumas and unlearn the teachings that have led to their use of violence in the home. By doing so, we feel that we have an opportunity to truly end the intergenerational cycle of violence in our community. So with that, I'd like to pass it on to Jody Shipp, our case management supervisor, who specifically provides case management services to our Change Step members.
Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself.
Can you hear me okay, Mr. Chair?
Yep.
Okay. My name is Jody Shipp. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. I am a current member of the Minnesota Army National Guard. I joined in 2003. I'm currently out of the 347 RSG in Brooklyn Park. Military police, I am advising the brigade colonel on equal opportunity policies currently. I started my time at DAP with the Change Step program as a volunteer. I sat down with each of the Change Step members and found out what resources they were already receiving in the community and what resources have they yet to be connected with. I found that many of the Change Step participants didn't feel like they deserved to be connected to any resources and that they were undeserving of support from the community. There was a lot of shame and a lot of guilt with the participants in the program at that time. And today I would just like to read a statement from a participant who graduated from our Change Step program. The Change Step program is really important for veterans like me. In the military, we are trained to have a strike-first mentality. We all share this experience as veterans in the military. And while this training isn't an excuse for our abusive behavior, it didn't help either. Because my probation was under Oklahoma law, I had to be in the program for 52 weeks. DAP was the only place in the Twin Cities that accommodated me and made it possible for me to meet with my parole requirements. I think in the beginning I thought I was going to be a waste of my time because I felt like my situation didn't require me to be at the Domestic Abuse Project. Things started to change for me after another man in my group vividly presented his story of abuse in graphic detail. This was during a taking responsibility assignment, and he really owned the harm that he had done. I identified with this story. I really felt the weight of what I had done. I tried to continue to set the tone by this veteran because he had helped me address my story so honestly. Sometimes when guys start the men's program, they are skeptical. But the groups are special because we form camaraderie that allows us to give honest feedback and to hold each other accountable, as if we were in our own platoon. We all did something that was harmful to people that we loved and the community. And there's no denying that. But we also need a place where we can speak freely about our abusive behaviors and process them in a way that can really help us heal. We need to take responsibility for ourselves and heal from the shame and guilt that we understand the harm and pain that we have caused. DAP provides the space to accomplish all of this and much, much more. Domestic Abuse Project became a place where I could learn to take responsibility and break the cycle of violence in my life. I eventually came to like DAP. I look forward to discussion every week because I could talk about what I was working on and what I still needed help with. I knew that if I really wanted to be back with my kids and to have a healthy co-parenting relationship with their mom, I had to change. After many weeks in the Change Step program, I have learned to stop my threatening and violent behavior. I know how to identify these behaviors as abuse. The group sessions about self-control, nonviolence, and communication have been great because I have now learned how to implement these good practices and I can use them with my future partner. I want to be present in my kids' lives and I want to be a positive influence. I know that that means I have to continue to take responsibility for my actions and practice self-control in all parts of my life. I don't want my kids to grow up witnessing violence or thinking that abuse in relationships is okay or normal. I want to be who the mother of my kids thought I was for my girls. I want to teach my kids how they should be treated. I'm taking responsibility, and the cycle of violence stops with me. I yield for questions.
Thank you. Any questions from the committee?
President Dimmer. Just a quick, maybe a quick statement is that this is an outstanding program, and also it correlates or works together with veterans courts, too. I sat in on the veterans courts in Hennepin County and also just 2 weeks ago in Washington County to see these veterans come forward, actually to see a graduation where it takes 2 years many times to get through the veterans court program. And I think there's about 9 counties out of the 87 counties that have veterans courts. I would hope that we can increase that. So it's just a great program to see them come before the judge, and the judge will ask them how they're doing and so forth, and their caseworker is there, and it's just an excellent program that works correlating with this program. Thank you.
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think I got part of my answer here from Representative Detmer's comments, but I'm presuming that veterans that come to you are clean and sober.
To the testifiers.
Yeah. I'm like, are they?
Mr. Chair, Representative, if we have concerns of chemical dependency or homelessness or any other concerns, we would recommend that they get those addressed first. And as a case manager, that is something that I can help connect the veteran with that's already in the community. And that would be ideal. I don't think that we can really talk about the domestic violence that's going on if there's a chemical dependency issue going on.
Mr. Chair, in my experience working with veterans, mostly Vietnam vets, it's rare that the two don't go together.
We oftentimes do see co-occurrence.
Any other questions from the committee? Is there anybody from the audience that would like to testify for or against this bill? Representative Green, you have the final word. Representative Johnson, I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair, members. This is a good program that needs to go forward. We need to do whatever we can for our veterans. They're the ones that have given us and protect our freedoms, and we need to do everything we can for them. Thank you.
All right. The chair renews his motion that House File 530 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. Motion carries. Thank you.
Thank you.
House File 586, Representative Becker Finn.
Oh, it's in the back. New guy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So House File 586, and maybe Mr. Chair, you remind me where you'd like this to go next.
So Representative Becker-Finn moves that House File 586 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Government Operations. Representative Becker-Finn, please proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill is simple, but the issue is not. The bill would establish a Veterans Suicide Awareness Day every October. It's really that simple. I also want to make clear that addressing the issue of veteran suicide, obviously there's more that we need to do, but we need to at least start with bringing more awareness to the issue and talking about it out in the open. Behind every veteran is a family and a community who loves them, and I have a testifier today who is a family member who's been affected by this issue.
Thank you. Well, please identify yourself for the record and welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Alyssa Harrington, and I am here today in support of House File 586 to declare a Veterans Suicide Awareness Day. I want to talk about the breadth and depth of the veteran suicide issue a little bit. and why we need this bill as a starting place, as a way to bring awareness to the issue, and most importantly, to bring it out of the shadows and into the daylight. I want to talk about what happens before a crisis, at the point of crisis, and afterwards. I want to start by telling you how I spent my brother's 34th birthday this past December. I spent it down in Austin, Minnesota, with a very talented tattoo artist. As I sat there getting my first tattoo, I got to speak with a veteran. The two of them together run the Inked Warrior Project and do healing tattoos for veterans, and as it turns out, for their families. The tattoo I got was comprised of a compass rose, which, as many of you might know, is always a signal and a sign that veterans, and that particularly sailors, would have to come home. It's surrounded by Celtic knots, which are signs of the everlasting. And above it is La Tulle du Nord, because at our heart, both my brother and I are Minnesotans, and we always follow the Star of the North. And in the center is Justin's tattoo, the tattoo he designed on him by himself, the tattoo that he got when he left, when he was in the Marines, and the tattoo that was used to identify his body. As I sat there speaking with a veteran who was not my brother, I got to speak with him about the 20-some veterans a day who commit suicide, because my brother was one of them. From the veteran and from the other veterans I've spoken with, I consistently hear other stories of people, of families, of veterans who have been affected by veteran suicide, and not just the way that we talk about it normally, the 18, 19, 22 a day, pick your number, but also of the overdoses, of the accidents, of the alcoholism and the depths of despair. And every time I speak with a veteran about suicide, these are the stories I hear, quietly, just to me. I want to go back in time now and tell you a little bit about my brother. This is my favorite picture of the two of us together. It was taken a couple of years ago, and as you can see, my brother and I are laughing together, which is how we spent much time when we were younger. Justin's story and mine actually run through Representative Detmer's district, and Representative Detmer probably has no idea about this, but he conducted my band one year, which is important because, you see, my brother was in the same band and was an incredibly talented trumpet player. He was so talented that as a junior in high school, he was able to audition for the Marine Corps band, and they had to flub his numbers down to allow him to go to basic training. Somehow, they managed to average scores of fours and fives to get a 3.9, just so that he could go and be a Marine. And so he left Forest Lake High School, and he went out west to basic training camp. And he came back as a Marine in his dress blues. He played the trumpet everywhere in the world with the Marine Corps band. He was stationed out of Cherry Point, North Carolina. He went everywhere, from Ireland to New York to the West Coast to my wedding and eventually to Iraq. See, one thing that people don't necessarily know about the Marine Corps bands is that other than the president's own, they deploy. And so there was my brother, suddenly at Al Asad Air Base, with his trumpet and a gun. And he came home a different person. He came home a little bit less fun, a little bit less smiley, a little more tense. He came home first to North Carolina and continued to play with the band for the rest of his deployment, and then eventually came home to Minnesota, where he followed in my father's footsteps and went into the electrical trade as part of the apprenticeship program there, specifically as a veteran. Because my brother was a fixer. He always wanted to fix things. There are so many things in my house that wouldn't work if it were not for my brother. He liked to solve problems. I got the opportunity to spend some time with some of his friends, including an Army veteran friend of his who worked at Best Buy with him. He told me stories about how my brother and him decided to design new uniforms for the Geek Squad on their own. They picked out samples of fabric, they sewed them themselves, and they managed to wear them for 6 months before anyone noticed. And during those 6 months, as they were on the job truck, my brother also helped him get over his alcoholism. But under it all, my brother was an artist. He, with his girlfriend, painted across the entire state. He took part in musical exploits his entire life. You handed him an instrument and he could play it. But his love was always the trumpet. And he used that to play taps, not only at my grandfather's funeral, but at many funerals across Minnesota. And so one night last February, when he realized that he was suicidal, he tried to be the fixer that he was and the problem solver that he was, and he called the hotline. And he went to the VA, and he never left the parking lot. Now, plenty of ink has been spilled on exactly what happened with my brother. There is an OIG report that spells out the failings of the VA, but I'm not here to talk about that. There are numerous stories that you can find in the media if you look up either of our names. And most recently, last Thursday, a Washington Post report came out on the parking lot suicides, heavily featuring my brother's case. But instead, I'm here to talk to you about the aftermath of what happens to family, to friends, and to communities in the wake of veteran suicide and why it's important that we bring awareness to it on a certain day. My tattoo is a physical manifestation of my grief and my love for my brother. It is a string that connects me to him, that is always with me, and that connects me to the suicide of him as well. I want you to imagine for a second those 22 a day. And I want you to imagine strings like the one I have with my brother, connected to all of the people who loved them, their family, their friends, their coworkers, their brothers and sisters in arms. And I want you to imagine that so many of us sit out here under a taboo that we can't talk about those ties. It's getting better, but suicide is still a taboo, and especially in the veteran and military community. Taboos come from the ideas of suicide as being an easy way out, as being sinful, as being someone who has just given up. My brother's words during his last week over and over again to the VA staff were, "How do I fix this? Where's the solution? What's the plan?" They weren't words of someone who was ready to give up. But because of these taboos, it's difficult to talk about. You still get strange looks from people. You still have the stigma of having to talk about a suicide. And on top of that, there are additionally the taboos of suicide in the military. They are the ideas that somehow it's an unhonorable death, that it is a soldier who has abandoned his post, that it is a soldier who couldn't police himself. And because of these, it's hard, not just in the aftermath, for those of us who are suffering in the community with the losses and with the grief to talk about it with others, but it's also difficult for veterans to come forward and get the help they need. My brother didn't want to disappoint anyone. He didn't want to be a burden. I cannot describe the grief that I felt reading in a government report that the reason my brother didn't want to come home was because he thought he would be a burden on us. but that's the type of person he was. And in hearing the stories from other survivors, that's the kind of men and women who are in the military. And because of this, we need to talk about it more. We need to be more open about it. Because in my own background, I used to work here for 5 years in constituent services. I have a master's in advocacy and political leadership and a JD. And I know what it takes to make good policy. And I know that first and foremost, it means talking about the issues open and honestly. And we can't do that right now. So I'm here to support this bill because I believe that it is time that we speak about the issues of veteran suicide, how we prevent it, how we address the care of veterans in a crisis, and how we care for the community afterwards, because we can't lose another soldier. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions from the committee members? Representative Detmer.
Yes, Mr. Chair, and first of all, thank you for coming forward and talk about Justin's in his life and your family's life. And I think a lot of people don't understand that when you're part of a military band, your second duty is to guard the troops and guard the bases. Sure, you're a musician, but you're also trained in the different weaponry and so forth. And just because you're part of a band, and for 2 years of my military career, I was a band commander. As a warrant officer, all of the commanders in the United States Army Reserve and bands and National Guard bands are warrant officers. And those people that are part of the military band program are just out, they're professionals. They're very good at what they're doing, but they're also soldiers and airmen, Marine Corps, Navy, all these men and women that serve are first of all, they serve their country, not just in the world of music, but also in defending our country. And yet, when they go overseas, they're out there to entertain our troops, to bring a little bit of home with our troops. So this is a great bill that you brought forward, and we hope we can see this forward all the way. Thank you so much.
Any other questions? Anybody from the audience care to testify in favor or against this bill? All right, Representative Beckerfin, you have the last word.
Yep, I would renew my motion to refer this to government operations. There are no words that I could say right now that would be more powerful than Ms. Harrington's.
Thank you. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. Motion carries. Before we adjourn next week, we're going to have a presentation from VFW Minnesota. Bill hearings on Veterans Defense Project, Veterans Restorative Justice Act. The hearing will be posted online. And Representative Detmer.
Mr. Chair, do we know how many bills that are waiting to come to the committee? I'm sure they're all sitting in Ways and Means, but do you know how many bills that we're going to actually be working on?
Representative Detmer, we have a spreadsheet going. We've got about 15 or 20.
Okay.
After we get through these reports from the budget stuff, we'll be you can expect our committee hearings will be pretty full of bills to hear, and hopefully there will be no after session extracurriculars that we have to do, but we'll wait and judge that as it goes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
With that, hearing's adjourned.